Welcome, everyone, to another edition of the Marijuana Policy Insider. I'm Russ Belville, and joining us today to discuss matters in Washington, D.C., as the district goes, not the nation's capital, but the actual district itself, we're speaking with Kate Bell, who's legislative counsel with the Marijuana Policy Project in Washington, D.C. Kate, thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me.
So to discuss Washington, D.C., let's just lay down some basics for our listeners who may not understand that, you know, it's not quite a state, but it's not really a city. Maybe tell our listeners a little bit about how the government there covering Washington, D.C. works.
Sure. So a lot of people don't realize that the District of Columbia actually has a larger population than some states. And it is growing every day. So there are many people who live here who are not members of Congress or otherwise working for the federal government. And we have our own government. We have a mayor and we have a district council. And they represent us in all eight wards of the city. And they get to make laws that govern the District of Columbia. However, unfortunately, we are also subject to the whims of Congress. So all of the laws made by the council go for a review period during which Congress can essentially overturn our laws by passing a resolution through both chambers that's subject to veto by the president. Normally, they don't have the ability to actually do that. So what they do instead is they put appropriations riders on their massive federal appropriations bills that Congress passes every year, and they use those to impact D.C. law.
So for folks that recall the election that happened where D.C. legalized the adult use of cannabis, part of the problem moving forward with getting in any sort of shops, any sort of retail going on there, any sort of commerce, has to do with what you just mentioned, that whole federal appropriations process, correct?
Correct. So Congressman Andy Harris, who is from the Eastern Shore in Maryland, did not like Initiative 71, wanted to block it. And he added a rider onto the appropriations bill that year that attempted to do so. It actually didn't block the effect of Initiative 71 because of the way that it was drafted, but it has kept D.C. from reducing any penalties for the use, possession, manufacturing, et cetera, of marijuana or any other substance that is in Schedule 1. Under the federal law. And so as a result of that, the only stores that are permitted to sell cannabis in D.C. are the pre-existing medical marijuana dispensaries, but we do not have the ability to tax, regulate, or have lawful sales for adults 21 and up.
It's such an interesting story in Washington, D.C. Prior to the adult use, the recreational, so-called recreational legalization, they've had medical cannabis access. But even that was a tortured path that began in the 90s and didn't get resolved into, what was it, 2010, before we could get around these congressional roadblocks, even for medical in D.C.?
So, yes, Congress blocked the medical law, which was passed in 1998, from taking effect for over a decade, and we didn't have dispensaries opening here until I believe it was 2013 when they actually opened.
So this takes us to where we're at today in discussing one of the latest alerts that came from Marijuana Policy Project regarding a bill in the district council are they councilman, assemblyman Grosso there in D.C. to provide well, pretty much universal access to those medical cannabis dispensaries. Can you give our listeners an explanation of this?
Sure. So Councilmember David Grosso, who is one of our at-large council members, so he represents the whole city, introduced a bill. It's B-22-446 that would allow anyone 21 and over to access the dispensaries. They must provide a signed affidavit that they're using marijuana for medical purposes, and that they're also aware of both state and federal marijuana laws. It has currently three co-sponsors, and yes, it would essentially change the ability of adults 21 and up to access the dispensaries.
And I can imagine that congressional critics of this and other opponents of marijuana legalization are going to see this as an end around, as a wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Of course, you're going to say it's for medical purposes, but really, this is just D.C. Council trying to get around this roadblock that's forbidding any sort of cannabis commerce. What's your response if the critics came back with that sort of charge? Is that a valid charge?
Well, I mean, the purpose of the affidavit, including that they're aware of federal marijuana laws, I mean, obviously under federal law, no marijuana possession is legal, no marijuana sale is legal. And federal law doesn't make a distinction between medical and adult use in the Controlled Substances Act. So, you know, it doesn't somehow become more illegal because of the purpose that you're using it for. So, I mean, in that sense, it doesn't make a difference. There is one distinction in federal law with something called the Rohrabacher Amendment, which is also an appropriations provision. But that doesn't actually change the legality of medical marijuana. It just says that the Department of Justice can't spend money enforcing prohibition in a way that would interfere with state medical marijuana programs, but it doesn't actually change the underlying law.
Interesting how this is all shaking out in Washington, D.C. We're speaking with Kate Bell, who's legislative counsel with the Marijuana Policy Project. And getting back to the issue of medical cannabis, we, of course, have now 29 or 30 states, depending on how you count them, plus Washington, D.C., that recognize some sort of access to medical cannabis. And one of the issues that comes up all the time is the patients traveling from state to state, or those who might want to visit our nation's capital and be able to use their medicine while they are there. What is the latest when it comes to recognizing out-of-state medical cannabis patients in Washington, D.C.?
So the council passed a law in 2016, which took effect this year because of that long period of congressional review, that made various improvements to the medical marijuana program here in D.C., including setting up lab testing, among other things. And one of the things that it did was permit out-of-state patients who have a valid card from their state to come to D.C. and to shop at our dispensaries. And unfortunately, the Department of Health has completely misconstrued the intent of the council in passing that law, and their regulation would require full reciprocity with the D.C. medical program in the other state, including allowing D.C. residents to purchase cannabis from their dispensaries in that state. I think one of the issues here is that sometimes advocates and lawmakers use the term reciprocity as a shortcut, but that's not actually accurate. What those laws really do in the states that have them is give some legal protections to patients from out of state.
Okay. And when it comes to these sort of provisions, are they dependent on the state you're in or the state you're from? Because I can imagine a state like, say, New Jersey or New York, where the qualifying conditions are really strict and hard to qualify under, compared to a state like California, where just about anyone can qualify, or now we're talking Washington, D.C., possibly being just anyone self-certifying. How is that possible? How are we going to reconcile these disparities in the law and not have a flood of people trying to get the easiest card they can get?
So it depends on the state you're in. For example, in Delaware, patients who are protected under the laws of other states and who have conditions that qualify in Delaware can legally possess cannabis in the state of Delaware. So if you are from California and you have a medical card, you can legally possess cannabis in Delaware, but only if whatever your qualifying condition is also qualifies in Delaware. So the whether or not possession is permitted depends on the law of the state you're in. In Colorado, as I think all your listeners know, if you are 21 and over, it doesn't matter whether you have a medical condition or not. Anyone can purchase and possess cannabis because they're in Colorado. Now, if they tried to bring that cannabis into neighboring Idaho, they're going to run into some problems.
Let me recommend not bringing that cannabis into neighboring Idaho. Kate Bell, thank you so much for discussing these issues with us with regard to Washington, D.C. and the issue of what is sometimes called reciprocity. Is there a place on the MPP site or elsewhere where people can get more information or maybe contact information if they'd like to ask you more questions?
Sure. MPP has a page with a map of all of the states. If you go to our website, mpp.org, and then you go to policy and then state policy, you'll actually see a map of all 50 states as well as D.C., and you can click on your state to get more information about the laws and sort of what's going on in that state. And you can also sign up for our email alerts, and that will let you know things like how to contact your council members to support Councilmember Grasso's bill.
Fantastic information out there at mpp.org. I encourage all the listeners to check that out. And Kate Bell, thank you so much for the work you're doing with MPP there in Washington, D.C. and all throughout the United States.
Thanks.